You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of August 16th, 2016. And this is episode number 278. Good grief. How long have I been doing this stuff? And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And I was just looking at my archives page on ParanewsInsider.com. And this is the 48th show I've done on WCJV. Pretty cool. I'm almost at a year. I almost made it. Well, this week's news includes Bigfoot in Vermont, poltergeist in Scotland. That's probably the biggest story of the week. You've probably heard all about this. It's been all over the news. And we'll talk about crop circles. Is crop circle research being held back by UFOs? What? Well, we'll talk a little bit more about crop circles, as there's a crop circle story that pretty much has gone up in smoke. And you'll find out a little bit more what that means. And I'll talk a little bit of history on crop circles as well. Since I don't talk too much about crop circles, we might as well circle the whole subject and talk a little history. You see what I did there? And we're also going to talk about a taboo topic, at least for me. I don't really like to talk about it all that much. A lot of people have sent in some angry emails. How come you're not covering this story or that story behind this particular phenomena? And yes, tonight I will be talking contrails. So get your aluminum foil out and make your little hats, because we're digging into the contrail phenomena. And tonight's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. And IMHS is one of a pair of the educational outlets for Paranexus Anomalous Research Association. All right. Now that the check is in the mail, what else is going on outside of the news? Well, for me, I've got a cool appearance later on this week, and you don't have to tune the radio dial any further than where you're at. I don't know if that makes any sense. But anyway, I will be appearing on Beyond Illusion Radio with host Leon Martin this Friday night, August 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And again, you don't have to turn the dial. You're here. Right here on WCJVradio.com. It's going to be a good time. And it preludes, or it's, I guess it's the pre-party. I don't know. I love after parties. But this will be the pre-party for then Saturday's event, August 20th, where I will be speaking at the 4th Annual Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. That is going to be a really good time. John Ventry of Hangar 101 fame, MUFON state director for Pennsylvania. Also going to have Stan Gordon. Stan is the man. Stan Gordon, longtime researcher, talked about him before here on the show, showcased a couple of his books as the book of the week. A UFO researcher for over 50 years, as well as a Bigfoot researcher at the same time. And also Eric Altman will also be there. Eric Altman is a good friend of mine. He's a big name in the Bigfoot field. He also was a mentee of Stan Gordon's. And he's the guy to go to in Pennsylvania for Bigfoot research and investigation. So I feel like the little guy in that group of John, Stan, and Eric. But I'm going to have a good time. It's going to be a lot of great information for that little town out there in Pennsylvania. And the best thing of all, the event is free to the public. And we're going to be talking about strange weather. I mean, my goodness, strange weather. July is supposedly the hottest month in the written history of the world, I guess. I don't know, since weather casting has been formulated and written down and documented. I don't know if I believe that. But anyway, that's what they're saying. And it's been pretty hot, so I can't really argue with that. Looking forward to some cooler days, although I do love summer. I'm not real big fan of fall and snow. I could take it or leave it. But anyway, back to the fourth annual Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania. Again, August 20th, Johnstown, Pennsylvania. You don't need any tickets. You just got to show up. And again, John Ventry, Stan Gordon, Eric Altman, myself, and local speakers will be talking about strange weather. And I forget the other, there's another topic. Somebody else's, a local group is also talking. And that's always cool to meet the local people that run groups in those particular areas. And I feel like I'm a transplanted Pennsylvanian. I spend more time out there this year than I have in Ohio, it seems like, at least speaking and doing public events. But I love it out there. It's a lot of fun. Learned a lot of stuff from Stan Gordon this year and Eric Altman as well. So I'm looking forward to getting back out there this weekend. And that's pretty much it until November for me, as far as appearances are concerned. So we're going to jump into the news already. See, I'm not going to drag it out like that, like I used to. Cutting the fat, going right to the news. So cryptid news this week, not a whole lot. I don't know why. This stuff comes in phases. You get a lot of ghost news, which is really what's going on right now. A lot of ghost pictures, videos, YouTube stuff. And now this big poltergeist case that's popped up, and it seems to run kind of in streaks. So I expect the ghost stuff to continue maybe another week or two. Then all of a sudden, pretty much guaranteeing we're going to get a big run of either UFO sightings or Bigfoot sightings. We'll see. But that being said, Bigfoot has made appearances recently in Bristol, Vermont. I don't know if you've seen this story. It's kind of weird. The sightings have occurred in the past, but this year they've appeared near a swimming hole, the town garage, and even in front of the elementary school. Well, that's pretty scary to see a Bigfoot there. Well, the sightings are not actually Bigfoot, but big feet. Yeah, that is, large footprints have appeared all over town in the form of spray painted feet. Yeah, I don't really know how. I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing. But apparently, these footprints have been a part of the town history for several decades. That's according to WCAX out of Burlington, Vermont, and have been seen for decades. And no one has been able to figure out who's been doing this or who's been leaving these spray painted footprints on the ground. Now, typically they're just pretty much little innocent things here and there, but this year the prints have turned up in all sorts of places, like I've mentioned, at the elementary school and spray painted on rocks at the local swimming hole, and even on the garage door of the town garage, and big orange prints. Usually they're white, and these were on the garage door in bright orange. Not cool, kids, or whoever's doing this. Not funny. Not funny at all. And it's making a lot of people upset in this little town of Bristol, Vermont. Very upset. Very upset. And it's turned into basically vandalism. It went from fun to vandalism pretty quick. According to Bristol Police Chief Kevin Gibbs, he says, quote, this was kind of a big blast of footprints. In the past, they would have turned up here or there, unquote. All the stuff came from a YouTube video, which I'll throw the link in the chat room. And during the week, I'll throw that out on the all the social media stuff that I have: Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus. You know, all those things that I do. Try not to inundate you with it, but I'll get that information out there. If you haven't seen it already, Google it yourself. I don't know, but I'll get it to you. Now, Kevin Gibbs, the Bristol police chief, also feels that whoever is responsible is facing community service at the least. So the jig is up. All these decades, all these prints, and now all of a sudden, you went and took things too far. And Gibbs also said, quote, "I believe that Bigfoot exists, but I don't think he's making footprints in Bristol," unquote. And why would he say that? Well, there is some speculation, as silly as it is, that Bigfoot is actually playing a prank on the town of less than 4,000 people. And some believe that these prints are actually created by Bigfoot, or it's to cover up stories of Bigfoot, although there really have not been any sightings in the area for quite a long time from what I could research. But I think most people believe that Bigfoot is not responsible, and it's more than likely just a vandal. Now, where is Bristol? Bristol is near Lake Champlain. And if that sounds familiar, well, that's home of the lake monster Champ. And Bristol's also close to the Adirondacks of New York. I don't remember the distance. It's a couple hours drive, which has been home to many East Coast Bigfoot sightings over the years. I know that's the stomping grounds of Steve Coles. Now, my thought is that someone has been doing this in the past, and they were probably very careful in how they did this. They weren't going crazy. They weren't going nuts. They just random prints here and there just to pique some curiosity about the subject of Bigfoot, doing it in a very playful manner. Yet I think now someone has taken this town folklore and stepped it up a few two notches too many and have taken things a bit too far. So we'll keep a close eye on that to see whether or not anybody gets busted by the law and has to go around and pay for the damage or whatever. I don't know. I don't know. I don't really respect that. I get it. It's fun. But you know, to spray paint in front of the school, scaring the kids, public property like that, come on. It's not cool. Not cool. So, ghost news. We're going to jump into ghost news now and talk about the story of the week. Yes, it's the big story about the poltergeist. And I mentioned the YouTube video about the Bigfoot thing. It's actually embedded in the story. So if you want to watch that, you can watch that. Pretty much all the quotes are within that. But we're going to jump to ghost news. Now, this has been kind of a confusing story. It started out real slow, and it just kind of exploded in the last couple of days. And it's been all over the place. I'm not sure how much I really believe of this stuff. But it's been taking the world by storm. And it started with a family on Stonelaw Road in Rutherglen, Scotland, which is just south of Glasgow. And the family is dealing with what they're calling a poltergeist. Now, the story broke last week where a woman and her son were experiencing strange events when they called police. The police were a little skeptical until they came into the home and they experienced clothes flying across the room, doors opening and closing, blinds and lampshades being turned upside down, and they even witnessed the family dog levitating. That sounds scary and exciting, right? Well, with no crime committed, the police were baffled as to what to do. They did contact the Catholic Church, which sent a priest to bless the home. What else is he going to do? Bake cookies? Well, experts across Scotland have been offering their help in the case. Of course they are. Donna Swanson from a paranormal investigation group based in Scotland called Shadow Assassins. Shadow Assassins. I don't know if that's a cool name for a ghost group. I've seen some really shady ones, pun intended, here in the United States. But Shadow Assassins? Wow. Maybe I'll get one of their shirts. Well, she has offered help with her mediumship skills in clearing the ghosts from locations. So she's in line. The Ghost Hunters Scotland has offered their blend of technical knowledge, historical research, demonology, research, and psychology psychics, and even a bit of skepticism of their 13-year-old group. They're jumping in the fray, too, to help. Oh, wait a second. Then enters the master investigator, Jason Love. Here he is. Love claims to have completed 847 cases. In case you're keeping track at home, 847 cases in his 24 years of paranormal investigation experience. I couldn't even tell you how many investigations I've been on. I can't even estimate. I don't know. And they're not all investigations. Some are just inquiries. Some are just, looking at things or helping another group. I don't really call them all cases. But just in case you're wondering, I did the math for you. I know you're wondering. It's kind of rolling through your head right now as you're thinking about this. 847 cases in 24 years. Now, that breaks down to just over 35 cases a year, or about 3 cases a month. That's nearly 1 case per week over the course of 24 years. That's a lot of stamina. That's a lot of cases in a very long period of time, but still, that's a lot. 35 a year, 3 a month for 24 years. So, you know, that's not consistent. It had to be times where he was doing a lot and other times where, you know, you're sick, you can't do stuff, or you're busy. And I'm not sure how thorough any of those could have been. I know that this totally distracted me when I read all this, which I'm doing to you right now. But Love claims to have investigated across Europe, the UK, and the United States, all while being a psychiatric nurse. Where do you get the time? Even the television show Most Haunted has been in touch with the family to offer their assistance. Well, why not? And they're probably there just to film an episode, more or less, probably. Now, will any of these ragtag ghost hunters solve this strange situation? Well, I would say no, but let's first take a quick peek at the facts behind the case before we get too carried away with these sensationalized headlines about flying dogs, the levitating dog, and the baffled police, because baffled was used like 150 times. Catherine Shreenan, age 51, and her teenage son, along with their chihuahua, had the police visit last Monday where officers purportedly observed an oven mitt fly past them. That was in one of the first stories published on this, was about an oven mitt. I never saw the oven mitt sensationalized. Well, as you know, the lampshades, saw that talked about. Lampshades moved in front of them as well. And despite the dramatic headline, no one actually saw the little dog hover or levitate or make its way to the top of the hedge. But the police did find the dog on top of the 7-foot-tall ledge, or hedge, I guess, outside. I don't know how it stood on the hedge. Well, probably a little 5-pound dog. Now, is this all an act? Well, it's kind of what I was thinking. Anytime people see objects moving, sometimes somebody's behind all of that, making things move. Now, Catherine Shreenan, the mother here, she seems pretty genuine about all this. I don't think she's behind it. If somebody is behind it, I don't think it's her. She's refused to be interviewed, and she seems pretty genuine that she does not want any attention about all this stuff, although a lot of the other people that I've mentioned here have been chiming in on their expert advice about this case, and they've pretty much more than made up for that attention-seeking stuff. But who's to say? Maybe she is behind it. Maybe her son is behind the moving objects, and it's just fooled police. And we've heard this before. We've heard similar cases where moving objects were actually put into motion by the living. Now, this is all these stories. It's also making it very difficult to separate facts from speculation. And the British tabloids that tend to spice up ghost stories beyond their initial reality. Now, another issue is, despite the claim that the police officers saw all of these events, there's actually no mention of just who these police officers were. No names. One of them said that one of them had 20 plus years of investigation. But where are the names? We have no no information to back up these statements that the police have witnessed all this stuff. No police reports, nothing made available to the public so far. Now, the other issue is that they're trying to paint the picture that since police officers observe things, that this makes the story more credible, or in fact makes it true. Well, while police are trained observers, they do go through training, at least here in the United States. I know when you go into the police academies, there are a lot of things you do on observational skills, especially when you're taking the tests. You have to match things up from one picture to the next, little things like that. So they do get tested on their observational skills, and you have to go back on your police reports and things. So they're constantly trying to remember information all the time. So they are kind of trained observers, but that does not mean that they're immune to being tricked by perspective or by emotion, which is a critical thing here, because this is not something that they're used to seeing. Obviously, now if there was a car accident, or somebody was, you know, stabbed, or somebody had their purse stolen, they would, you know, be very good at observing the details or how people were explaining what they saw, the witnesses. They would probably notice a lot of things that normal people wouldn't notice. But in the case of ghosts and objects flying around, they can be fooled just like anyone else. And again, it's out of the normal realm of day-to-day observations, the day-to-day things that they're doing. Not too many police go on ghost chases or ghost follow-ups to houses every day. Now, another great point about this story was brought up by skeptical journalist Sharon Hill in her blog on Doubtful News. She stated that with the popularity of the movie Conjuring 2, detailing the British Enfield poltergeist case, this might have added to the belief of the family and may have also influenced the police officers who responded. We have to remember, the movie is huge here in the United States, but the Enfield poltergeist happened on the other side of the pond there. So they're a little bit more familiar with all that, and I'm sure it's in their media a lot more than it is here. So in closing, this case just does not seem legitimate based on the many questions that are still unanswered and the vagueness of the details that should make this a believable story. Now, even the Enfield poltergeist was basically just an elaborate hoax. It was even admitted on television that they were fooling people. There was no ghost. I mean, the one girl said it right there in the interview. And people still making movies and writing books about it, which I'm sure that this case will probably more or less end up something like that down the road. But I'm very sure that we've not heard the end of this particular story. So we'll stay tuned. I'm sure there'll be some more things that are going to crop up in the next couple of weeks, if not by next week, and we'll talk about that. Now, the word crop, that was a great segue, because we're already at other news, and we're going to be talking about crop circles. How exciting is that? We don't talk crop circles very often here on the Paranormal News Insider. When we do, that's usually a hoax. But maybe, just maybe, we have a legitimate story here. Well, this one takes things a little bit different of an angle here. Talking about research. Now, quote, this is a quote. Most of us can't paint like Leonardo da Vinci. Now that I've chopped that up, let me start over again. Quote, most of us can't paint like Leonardo da Vinci. But we don't think the Mona Lisa was created by UFOs just because it is spectacularly difficult, unquote. Now, this is what Professor Richard Taylor of the University of Oregon said about crop circles being thought of as too difficult to create by human hands. So it's too difficult for us to do, so we automatically assume it has to be aliens or UFOs or both. Now, Taylor feels that the connection to UFOs has made it difficult, if not impossible, to have science interested in getting to the bottom of the crop circle creation process, and these beliefs with UFOs is holding back the search for real answers. Taylor, like many others, feel that people are behind these crop circles, and they are amazing artists that may actually even be using a microwave source that could heat and help bend stalks of crops without causing permanent damage in some cases. That's going pretty far. But you know, it's a plausible hypothesis here. Now, Australian nurse Megan Hazelwood, a self-declared independent crop circle researcher, I'd love to be one of those, put it on a business card. Well, she has been studying crop circles for over 15 years. Hazelwood states, quote, crop circles have appeared in all sorts of crops, even silver beet and rice paddies. But the ones in canola are the most extraordinary, in my opinion. Canola has a consistency like celery. If you bend canola at 45 degrees, it snaps. In canola fields, the plants are bent at 90 degrees to an inch above the ground. The whole stem lies parallel with the delicate flower heads intact. If you stomp the crown of canola, you would get mush. The delicate flower head would be totally destroyed. But in crop circles, eventually the plant will stand up again, unquote. So that means, I can summarize that whole paragraph there in one word. It has to be aliens, essentially is what she's saying. Now, Hazelwood feels that crop circles are definitely not designed by those on Earth. Again, aliens. Now, this, Taylor feels, is exactly what this underground art movement wants people to think. Very clever. So these artists, these people that have created these extraordinary pieces of art, very intricate. And if you've noticed, if you've watched crop circles over the years, they have become more and more intricate over the last, geez, even the last decade or so. Geometric patterns and become a lot more elaborate than if you look back, you know, 10, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when crop circles really became really huge in the 1980s, it became very popular. And as soon as the popularity spiked, then they were strangely seen all over the world. Kind of weird how that works out. So the underground art movement wants people to think that crop circles were not designed by those on Earth. And a lot of people are perpetuating this. Although I've met a lot of crop circle researchers that they're kind of on the fence. They don't really know. They know that people are out there creating these crop circles, but there's also some that just appear in a time frame that just is completely unexplainable. And some of the stuff is just scientifically impossible. We just don't have answers. We just don't know. But I do agree that some sort of research into this, some sort of scientific inquiry into how these are developed, I would really help a lot. And unfortunately, there are just those independent crop circle researchers out there that are doing all this work. The cereologists, I guess, is the the term about those who study these crop circles, cereologists. They're the ones out there doing all that work. And they are trying to get other scientists to do the research or to verify, confirm, or deny the plant things that they're collecting and sending off to these laboratories to be examined for different burns or electricity going through them or whatever is behind it. But until we actually, it's kind of like Bigfoot, until you actually see something going, something moving, there are a couple of videos online of crop circles being formed. I know there's one with these orbs that are swirling around. Well, that one was fake. There was a UFO show I was watching that showed that and claimed that it was real. And if they'd done 5 minutes of research before throwing that on TV, they would have found out that it was an admitted hoax. And the other one is it's another one with a UFO flying over it and it looks completely fake, CGI'd to death. And that one is also fake. But until, you know, just like Bigfoot, until we get a body, until we can observe this and get a lot of physical evidence, I don't think we're going to come up with the answers. It's just too speculative. When we gather pieces of crop and send them out to get sampled, people aren't believing this. And until traditional science gets involved, I just think we're spinning our wheels. We're never going to get the answers. Now, in late 2013, an intricate design of a crop circle that appeared to be a microchip was discovered in a California barley field. Now, this was a big deal. I remember when that one happened, a lot of people jumped on this as, wow, this is great. This is evidence. This is a proof that aliens do exist. Well, that one turned out to be a viral campaign for NVIDIA Corporation and their new Tegra K1 chip. Geez, a viral campaign with something paranormal? That never happens. Just kidding. It happens all the time, it seems like. Now, in this case, actually, crop circle researchers, again, seriologists, were actually quick to establish that this was a hoax. And that's going to play into our next story here about hoaxes and about crop circles. But first, I want to let you know that in case you were not aware, I don't know if you were or not, but you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, and we're emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're talking crop circles. Well, speaking of crops, this next story is about a crop circle that appeared in the Anstey Farm Shop, 6 miles east of Shaftesbury, and is 19 miles southwest of Stonehenge. I'm sure you're familiar with that place. Now, this circle is 100 meters in diameter. Meters. I know that doesn't mean a lot to people. You're like, what? 100 meters? I have no idea how big that is. Well, 328 feet, or back to the metric system, 109 yards, which is essentially the length of a football field, including 99% of one end zone, or 90% of one end zone. Anyway, the circle was discovered on Friday, August 12th, as Karen Price and her family, owners of the shop, came back from their vacation. Well, in England, I guess they call it a holiday. Okay, so they came back from holiday, and they were gone for 5 days. The circle contains 20 small symbols that resemble astrological signs surrounding a central mandala. The circle appeared in a field that used to be a maize. A maize. Does that not make any sense? Well, it was a maze of maize. Well, corn, I guess. So it's a maze of corn. Price said formal mazes used in the field. So she was the one behind creating these mazes. And she was very impressed with the design of this crop circle. And she said, quote, "I've designed mazes myself, but this surpasses anything I've ever seen. The first maze I did, took 6 weeks to create. So for this amazingly intricate pattern to be created so quickly is astonishing," unquote. And many others involved in crop circle investigation or, again, seriology have also stated that this is one of the best they have ever seen. Yeah, but not so fast. Now, I saw this link, I saw this story, and then I saw WCJV actually posted this on Facebook. The same time, I think I was clicking through and reading this. So this kind of broke really fast. A lot of people pay attention to this particular person, Linda Moulton Howe. She's an author, investigative journalist, TV documentary filmmaker, and researcher of all things anomalous. And she's also the face of earthfiles.com, which is a very great resource of anomalous paranormal type information. Now, she reported that there may be a logical explanation for the circle. And the time she was reporting this, the time that this hit the internet, there was a slew of other independent crop circle reporters and different websites were kind of reporting the same stuff. And I think she just kind of consolidated everything together. Now, she reports that the circle matches that of a symbol used by a company called Mothership Products and sold at allglass.com. Now, the Mothership Glass Products, how can I say this within FCC regulations? They're tobacco and herbal-related accessories used for medicinal and recreational use, if you get the hint. Anyway, Red Colley of Crop Circle Connector stated that the symbols on the outside of the circle match that of symbols used on glass pieces sold by Mothership Glass and essentially translates in the 10-letter word mothership, and then is repeated. The logo used by Mothership Glass has the words mothership repeated on the logo and would match the crop circle exactly. Other researchers have also noted many similarities since Friday, and allglass.com has posted an interesting blog post, which is all but a full public admittance of a hoax. And they've actually consolidated a lot of information from various websites together. So it's kind of weird. I think they're really paying attention to that. And now, as to who was behind the creation of the circle, no one has really made any sort of connection about this. But I'm throwing it out there. I don't have any proof. I'm not making an accusation, but I'm just saying that I think Karen Price may have the skills to pull it off. And it makes a lot of sense that she's created all this stuff in this field. And why hasn't she been making these mazes recently? Maybe she came into a little bit of money from this. I don't know. That's just speculation. I'm just throwing that out there. Who knows? But I think it's all kind of strange that she has a background in creating stuff like that. And then all of a sudden we have this crop circle after 5 days. I don't know. Just throwing it out there. It could be aliens, though. It could be aliens. You can't put it past those aliens. They do all kinds of strange stuff that we don't know about. And they keep us guessing. I think they just keep us thinking that people are behind all this. I don't know. They're up to something. But anyway, do a little bit of background here on crop circles. Why not? We're talking about crop circles. And again, it's not a subject that comes up too often. And a lot of people don't really talk about it all that much. I've had the pleasure, I think it was last year when I was up in Canada for the I always try to think of these things and I can't remember them off the top of my head. When I got to meet Joanna Emery, who is a... All right, so where were we? I don't know where I cut out at, but we're at the beginning of the story anyway. So a little history on crop circles. Why not? We're doing a story on crop circles. Do a little research here. But I'm actually going to refer back to work I've done before on episode number 234, back on September 29th, 2015. Now, modern-day crop circle reports can be traced back to 1937, although unofficial reports go back as far as 1678 with what was called the mowing devil, which I'm sure you've seen the picture of that, and a woodcut pamphlet from Hertfordshire, England. A man named David Wood claimed that in the 1940s, he had previously made fake circles in the United Kingdom using ropes. Now, the term crop circle is attributed to longtime crop circle and anomalous researcher Colin Andrews. In 1991, Doug Bauer and David Chorley, known in croppy circles as Doug and Dave, claimed that they were responsible for a majority of crop circles prior to 1987 and over 200 of them from 1987 to 1991, when crop circle sightings began to boom and become even more popular than it is today. The duo created a circle in front of journalists and then brought in a seriologist, which again is the name for a crop circle researcher, named Pat Delgado. Now, Delgado claimed that the circle was legitimate and definitely not a fake. Oops. Well, one would think this would be the end of the line for crop circles, as it was pretty much for Delgado, who quit the field shortly after this public incident. However, after this announcement and the worldwide attention to crop circles, they became a boom in circle formations that continued well into the 1990s. Bauer had visited Australia, where he saw media reports of an impression in a swampland that accompanied a UFO sighting. Once back in England, he convinced his friend Chorley to create fake circles on a Friday pub night. Nothing like a couple of beers that make guys make some really dumb decisions. Well, they had no attention until a 1981 circle at Cheesefoot Hill that could be seen by people, a lot of people. And the crop circle gained instant international attention. And as they continue to fabricate circles, an entire industry of investigators, experts, books, and other types of media was created around the belief driven by the fake circles. once the pair heard word that the government was going to create an inquiry about the circles, well, they decided they had enough fun and came clean. While neither man seemed to profit from these creations, with the exception of a few grand of their exclusive story of their reveal to Today newspaper, it was claimed at the time that they were part of a conspiracy involving MI5, although the pair dismissed the idea with a laugh and probably a beer held high. Even if they were commissioned by the government, their creation of fake circles helped generate a worldwide interest in the current culture of belief that exists today. So if it was a plan to discredit, well, that plan surely backfired. And that's your crop circle report for the week. Now we're going to talk chemtrails. Not my favorite topic. I think it's a lot of smoke. Well, a lot more water than smoke. Chemtrails. A topic I'm very skeptical about. And again, it doesn't get much time here on the air on the Paranormal News Insider. But Mysterious Universe published a story on Monday that was titled New Research Sheds Light on Chemtrail Theories. And I kind of rolled my eyes and I thought, I got to read it. I have to read it. It's my job here. So I took the time to read through it and I was kind of impressed with it. So it was a good article. So is it possible that there is a global conspiracy where the world's governments are trying to poison or used mind control chemical agents to control the world population by spraying chemicals from airplanes? That's the million-dollar question here. Now, in an international survey, around 17% of respondents felt that it was indeed true or partially true that a secret large-scale atmospheric spraying program, or SLAP, that's pretty cool, secret large-scale atmospheric spraying program, SLAP. I have the science behind all this. If you're into scientific breakdowns of information, there you go. Click on that link. And if you're not in the chat room, you're missing out on all the information that I'm copying and pasting in there. But again, during the week, if I remember, I'll be putting all that information out to you through social media, through Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, like I've mentioned. Now, 17% of respondents felt that this was true. However, a similar survey of 77 scientists, say that 10 times fast, provided statistics that showed 98.7%, or 76 of the 77 scientists, had not encountered any evidence of SLAP, maybe SLAP happiness, and could easily explain the contrails or condensation trails as simple physics and chemistry. According to professor of Earth System Science, Stephen Davis of the University of California, Irvine, states that the internet has seemingly fueled the conspiracy theories behind chemtrails. It is thought that with more air traffic, better engine technology, thus higher flying airplanes with cooler running engines, has caused more of this condensation pretty much to appear in clouds and appeared to linger a lot longer. Now, especially at higher altitudes, because again, they're flying higher because there's more traffic. The engines are much better. So all these things kind of weigh in. And it's also thought that, I've mentioned it already once, climate change, is that nasty double C word, climate change has also helped to enhance these vapor trails as well. So I'm not sure. This pretty much proves that chemtrails are kind of an imagination thing. And I've seen plenty of pictures, plenty of stories out there that people have tried to put on to perpetuate the theory that there is this SLAP, secret large-scale atmospheric spraying program. But a lot of them I've been able to pretty much tear apart with previously posted photographs that were used for different things, and these people made these stories into something fake. But it's weird because there's a lot of people that really believe in this stuff very vehemently. They're very sold on this idea that there is a conspiracy and that these things, these little trails in the sky, are in fact some sort of global government conspiracy that poisoning people, or I don't know. It's the same as the fluoride in the water thing, I think. Better than the Kool-Aid thing, I guess. But anyway, that's my take on contrails, chemtrails, whatever you want to call them. Condensation trails is pretty much what I call those things. And that's that. Now I want to talk about the book of the week. I'm excited for this week's book of the week. I actually spilled the beans, which I don't normally do, on Facebook about 45 minutes before I came on the air. Ronald Murphy has written the book of the week this week, and I just finished it. I just actually got it, goodness, about 16 days ago, give or take. I don't know. I started reading it the day I bought it. Kind of scared him because I came back to his table and told him, hey, I didn't know you saw that TV show. Anyway, Ron Murphy, where do I start? Well, let me start where I met him, I guess. I first met him at the Butler Paracon on April 16th of this year, where he spoke. I don't remember. I think he was the first or second person to speak of that day. And I was really impressed. His research and his, not just his research, but his presentation was very good. Now, we're all amateurs, you know, amateurs at presenting information. Some of us are good researchers, but not so good at presenting things. And sometimes we get up there and we make a lot of mistakes. We fumble around and we say ahs and ums and all these weird things come out of our mouths and we fumble and we don't speak clearly into the microphone or we turn to the PowerPoint presentation screen and point the entire time. We all make a lot of mistakes. But Ron did a very good job, and I noticed how his body language was and how he verbalized and how he paid attention to the crowd. He did a fantastic job of presenting. So it was pretty much my favorite presentation. Not that I didn't enjoy Stan Gordon's or anybody else's, but it was very good. And it kind of threw me off because I never heard of Ron. I never heard of the fact that he'd written all these books. It kind of took me by surprise. Here's a guy that is an excellent researcher and a great author, and never even heard of this guy. And unfortunately, the Butler Paracon was kind of quick. And it was over before I knew it. And there was a couple of people that I didn't actually get to meet during that Saturday event. It was only one day. It was only a few hours. And, of course, I had to present. And after presenting, I got a few people up to the table. You know, when you're presenting, people take you a lot more serious than when you just have a table with a bunch of books. They think you're just there to sell ideas. But when you get up in front of the crowd and you're able to speak, they take you a lot more serious. So I was tied up with people, and Ron was over at the table with the Seaches, Brian and Terry Seach, with their cryptozoology group, which I went by through a few times and talked to those guys. But they're always busy. They're like the group where everyone gravitates to. So they had a very busy table. They're right next to Stan Gordon, and John Venturi was down there too. So that whole area was pretty packed. So I think I met him, but didn't really get a chance to talk to him. But then there was the Kecksburg UFO Festival, which was Friday night, Saturday, all day, 10 hours, and then half day Sunday, where we had the conference where people spoke. I didn't speak. But we had plenty of time to catch up, plenty of time to chit-chat and talk, and really got to know Ron, and was really, really impressed with his background, his research. I didn't know. He was an actor. He's also a folklorist, cryptozoologist, and an investigator. And I was even more surprised to learn about all the other books that he's read, or written, I should say. Well, he's read a lot too. But I know he wrote the On Dog Man. He's doing a series called On. Started with On Mermaids, which is an exploration of mermaid folklore. And then he did On Wild Man, which is the book of the week this week, Tracking Bigfoot Through History, which is an interesting concept. And one of his latest release was what he did back in April was On Dog Man, Tracking the Werewolf Through History, which was very impressive. So I was really looking forward to reading that book, as well as his On Wild Man, which again is the book of the week this week. So I was really excited for this book. Couldn't wait to read it. And I started reading it before we even left the event. I think it was Saturday. I think I was reading this book already in between people coming up to the table and talking to me and Stan and everybody else, everything else that was going on at the time. And for me, I wrote my book, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist. I took kind of a modern take on Bigfoot. You know, the up-to-date started in the 1930s with some of the modern-day sightings. I kind of dismissed some of the historical stuff. A lot of the newspaper stuff, I think, is very tongue-in-cheek, and it's very, it plays off of the thought of the wild man. And so I wasn't sure what to take. I knew Ron was an excellent researcher. And when I say excellent researcher, I'm not just throwing that out there saying, hey, he's an excellent researcher. No, Ron Murphy is an excellent researcher. His books blew me away. The amount of research he's done and the information that he's been able to gather, probably by far one of the best books on the historical aspect of Bigfoot that I've ever read. And this goes way back, folks. We're talking 2,000 years. And he breaks it down by times, by ages. Again, the biblical Bigfoot, the biblical stuff. And then getting into the Greeks, the Romans, the Dark Ages, medieval. And it just kind of ties it all together. So he kind of takes us on a journey, a little bit of a personal journey in the beginning, where he connects with the readers. And then he gets you on the wild man bus and drives you around through history and shows a lot of pictures and a lot of drawings and a lot of artwork, and as well as artifacts that bring the wild man to life. So if you're interested in the history of Bigfoot or wild man, this is by far one of the best books you're going to find on the history of Bigfoot or the wild man, which is essentially a cultural symbol basically brought to life. And again, Ron has written a lot of other books. I only have on Dogman other than this one. And I can't wait to read that one. I just finished this on Wild Man a couple of days ago. And been putting it off being the book of the week. There's some certain parts that I wanted to research or reread again. And because it was just, it's a lot of information. It's not a huge book. Don't be afraid. Don't be intimidated by a book that's going to teach you a lot of stuff. It's only 97 pages, but it reads like 200 easily, or 300, because there's so much information packed. He doesn't beat around the bush. He gets right to the point, and it's very direct, and it's very well written, very easy to read. Doesn't skip around. I can't say enough about his writing skills. I mean, gosh, he churns out more books in a year than I've written my entire life. So can't say enough about this. On Wild Man, Tracking Bigfoot Through History. You can get this on Amazon. He makes a lot of appearances. I think he's got a website in creation. I don't know if it's been published yet. I'll have to check up with him. That will show all of his appearances. You definitely want to meet this guy. You definitely want to sit down and talk to him. And get to know him, his research on folklore and historical stuff is by far some of the best I've ever seen. So looking forward to more work from him, and I'll eventually have On Dogman here on the radio show here as well. Looking forward to finishing that book and getting a review out there. But in the meantime, again, check it out on, it's $10. So that's not bad on Amazon. I think it's about the same if you meet him in person, $10, but you get it autographed and you get to meet the author. That's even cooler. He lives in southwestern Pennsylvania, kind of in the area where I frequent with all my appearances. I don't think he's going to be at the event this weekend. He was at the Dogman Symposium. Grief, when was that? The one that I should have been at, back on August 6th, I believe. Yeah, 10 days ago in Defiance. He was here in Ohio, and I didn't go say hi. But he's out on the tour. He's out on the lecture circuit. So, stay tuned. As soon as his website is official, I'll definitely get that up and plug this book a little bit more. We'll talk about that if I remember, and get that information out too. This is definitely a book that you want to get a hold of. if you're into Bigfoot at all, this digs very deep into the history of Bigfoot. And I could talk a whole hour on this book. It's an excellent book. But speaking of events, I want to throw this in here real quick. Again, August 20th, I'll be at the Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. John Ventry, Stan Gordon, Eric Altman, myself, and a couple of other local speakers will be on hand. And the event is, again, free. And the night before, I'll throw this out there again. I'll be on Beyond Illusion Radio with host Leon Martin Friday night, August 19th, 8 p.m. Eastern, right here, WCJVradio.com. Looking forward to that. And on the network. Going to be a lot of fun. A lot of other events. There's another one this weekend. Stratica Paracon in Hutchinson, Kansas. Heard that one's going to be good too. Lots of stuff coming up through August, September, and October. October is the crazy season for us, as you well know. And I'm trying to keep up to date. I just had to update this website this morning. So much stuff coming down the pipe. I can't keep up. I'm just too busy lately with too many things. But anyway, if you want to check out the events that are going on here in the United States, really North America, click on paranewsinsider.com and check out the events tab at the top. That way you can see, break it down by ghost conferences, conventions, whatever is the main theme of these events, UFO conventions, and cryptozoological conventions as well. Some of them overlap, like, I don't know, some of them are in all three, but some are specific, like the Mothman Festival coming up in September in Point Pleasant that I'm going to miss because I'll be flying back from Seattle. So I'm not going to be able to be at that one. It's going to be a great one. I'm kicking myself already. I'm mad about the Dogman Symposium, but now you'll miss that one too. But anyway, it's not a complete list, but I'll challenge you to find a better list of events out there anywhere. And I highly recommend getting to one of these events, you know, if it's within driving distance, because you're going to network with people. You're going to learn a lot from other people. Yeah, we're all amateurs, but still, there's some great information that you're going to find from these other people that you're not going to find by just reading these books. You're not going to find by scouring the internet. The stuff is great. And one story, too, that I'm not going to have time to talk about today. I've kind of bumped this thing out. My goodness, for like 3 weeks now, the story, just never really had the time to talk about this thing. I've kind of bumped it around, and I finally just said, you know what? The heck with it. I'm just going to write a blog. So I'm not sure if you know this, but at the top of the Paranews Insider website, next to the events, there's another tab called News, where you can get the news from the Anomalous and Unexplained Mysteries. There's also a blog link. And I don't write too many blogs. I don't have a whole lot of time in my spare time, but I wrote up this little thing a while ago and I wanted to get it out there. I was going to talk about it on the show. Heck, I still may talk about it on the show. I don't know. We'll see how the news goes for next week. But the blog is titled 10 Questions Every Ghost Investigator Should Ponder. And it goes through 10 things. And if you're a ghost investigator, ghost researcher, read it. Read it. It's a good read for those of us that have gone through that journey of being an investigator to believing, to wondering why we're doing this. Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this stuff? What's in it for me? What's in it for the future? A lot of questions that I'm sure a lot of people ask every now and again. You know, and how do I become better? How do I become a better investigator? Lots of great questions here. And it steamrolls from one question to the next. So challenge you again to go out there and read this blog at paranewsinsider.com. And it's a Blogspot blog. So paranewsinsider.blogspot.com. You could find that information as well. And hopefully I'll have time to break down those questions and talk a little bit more about it in detail. And I also hope, gosh, I got like 4 different blog posts started. And not a whole lot of time to finish anything, but a lot of controversial stuff. Some of the stuff that I was going to be talking about in the paranormal poll, which is you need those, you know, what are those things called? Those little paddles to resuscitate somebody. Yeah, I think I need those to bring that back to life. But my fault, really, I haven't talked about it too much. So anyway, that being said, we're at the end of the program. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in, whether you're tuning in live or on the podcast. I've done the best I could to get this show out to as many different places as I can without going broke doing it at the same time. iTunes, iHeartRadio, on a lot of Android places, at least a dozen, maybe 15 different places that you can get this podcast delivered right to your phone or your tablet or your computer, wherever you listen to stuff. And I thank you for listening. It's a pleasure of mine to do the show, and it's really exciting when I see ratings and I see all those numbers that really don't mean a whole lot, but it's great to me that I know that people are listening. And that's what drives me to continue to do this show, is the fact that I know people are listening. I may not pack in 500 people in the chat room, but it's still fun to see traffic in there, and it's great to see people downloading this show. So again, big thanks to everybody in there. Huge thanks to Cindy for corralling me when whatever happens, happens with the technology. When it fails, it decides to fail. That's the beauty of live radio. And to Dita, of course, all the time for corralling everybody in the chat room, as she does all the time. And everybody else that tuned in there as well. So with that in mind, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, and the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind at least slightly ajar. And above all else, as always, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.